U.S. Senator Robert Menendez found guilty.
This case has always been about shocking levels of corruption. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes in the form of cash, gold bars, a Mercedes-Benz.
Protests in Kenya turned deadly again.
At least one person was killed in renewed anti-government protests.
And it's an 800-year-old tradition, the annual swan census in London.
When we catch a family of swans, the young cygnets, we take them ashore, we will weigh them, we will measure them, and we check them for any injuries.
Today is Wednesday, July 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
A jury in this courthouse convicted Senator Robert Menendez of corruption and national security offenses.
U.S. Senator Bob Menendez was convicted on Tuesday on all 16 criminal counts he faced, including bribery at his corruption trial. Here's Manhattan U.S. Attorney Damian Williams.
This case has always been about shocking levels of corruption. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes in the form of cash, gold bars, a Mercedes-Benz. This wasn't politics as usual, this was politics for profit. And now that a jury has convicted Bob Menendez, his years of selling his office to the highest bidder have finally come to an end.
In exchange for bribes, Menendez helped steer billions of dollars in American aid to Egypt. He accepted hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, gold bars, and car and mortgage payments from three businessmen. He maintains his innocence.
Yeah, I'm deeply disappointed by the jury's decision. I have every faith that the law and the facts did not sustain that decision and that we will be successful upon appeal.
Senior Democrats, including Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and fellow New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, quickly called on Menendez to resign from the Senate. Night number two at the Republican National Convention in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Joining us now for an update on how things are going is VOA's Steve Herman. So, night number two, give us the lay of the land this evening. What's happening in the convention hall?
Well, Scott, tonight the official theme is Make America Safe Again. But it could have really been named Republicans All Play Nice Again, because we have a number of Donald Trump's former foes in the Republican Party who ran against him for president, taking turns issuing a message of unity and basically support for Donald Trump and, of course, denigrating Joseph Biden, saying that Republicans all have to go together to get Biden back to his basement, as it was put by Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida.
I saw that Nikki Haley was on the schedule for tonight, but not in the part of the show, nor was Ron DeSantis, that's going to be broadcast on network television in the United States.
Oh, I think both of them showed up on most of the networks that were carrying the convention. No doubt about that, because those two were especially of interest to viewers across the country and all the networks because of the very contentious campaigns that they had run against Donald Trump. Nikki Haley, of course, was the very last candidate to stick it out and actually won some delegates that are at this convention, and she is now pledging to Donald Trump.
I know she released those delegates to the president, the former president, to just briefly explain to people what we're talking about is the primary elections gather human beings or delegates that come to the convention, and then they vote in a ceremony to nominate whoever it is to run as the party's nominee for president against the other party. What's the mood there? I mean, first night was, I know when he came out, it was just explosive in terms of emotion and applause, and the first time he had been seen since the assassination attempt. Have they been able to keep up that level of excitement tonight?
Well, Donald Trump came out again this evening with his bandaged ear, and also J.D. Vance, his selection to be his running mate. And if they win, J.D. Vance, the senator from Ohio, a very young fellow, 39 years old, would become the vice president of the United States. So it's a very jubilant mood. You have to understand that these are ordinary folks, for the most part, who come from all around the country, many from small towns. And this is an event that happens once every 4 years. And it is one huge party this time around for Donald Trump.
You know, you said he was in the hall again tonight. That's unusual. Usually you do not see the main candidate. You see him the first night, at the very end of the first night, they come out, they wave, they stand on stage with their spouse and their running mate, they wave. But then you don't see that person traditionally again until they give their acceptance speech. But I see he's sitting in the hall listening to everybody talk about him.
Well, he wanted to see what some of his former foes were saying against him and for them to know that he's sitting in the audience. I guess that's one way to look at it.
Well, it is in the Republican Party now really all about the one person. Even traditionally, if it weren't Donald Trump, everybody rallies around this one person to get them elected into the White House. And I guess why right. not?
Well, as you know, Scott, traditionally these major party conventions had quite a bit of sense of drama until recent decades where we still had a contested nominating process. Or if you go way back, things were decided in smoke-filled back rooms at the last minute. And you sometimes would have more than a dozen votes before you got a candidate. So that sort of drama is long gone. And these conventions nowadays are very orchestrated. They're more like a coronation than a nomination. And I think one thing that was remarkable with this particular Republican National Convention, the only real dissent involved the platform of the party, which again used to be a very big deal. But this platform was streamlined. It sounds very much like Donald Trump wrote it, or at least it was taken from his written words. And there was some objection to adopting this platform because the language on abortion, a very contentious domestic issue here in the United States, was softened to sort of widen the appeal of Trump and the Republican Party, is the way that they're portraying this. And there was no discussion on the floor about the platform. They took the voice vote. To me, it sounded like the no's were pretty close to the yeas, the yeses. But then the gavel slammed down saying that the platform had been adopted.
Hmm. Well, he's been saying on the campaign trail that, you know, we have to get elected. And one of the points of contention in the party is abortion. And he says, you know, I know it's been very emotional and I know you believe in this, but we have to get elected. And you're right. They're softening it up for the general election to try to bring in people that aren't as anti-abortion as perhaps some of the people you're talking about.
Right. And in a election year where we're down to a number of swing states and it could just take a few thousand votes in any one of these states to determine the outcome of the election, you're going to try to widen your appeal as much as you can.
All right. VOA Steve Herman inside the convention hall in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Thanks so much for the update.
My pleasure, Scott.
News breaking today says the United States got intelligence from a human source in recent weeks about an Iranian plot to assassinate former President Donald Trump. CNN, citing people briefed on the matter, said there is no indication that the Iranian plot and the weekend assassination attempt are related. Iran says the allegations are unsubstantiated and malicious.
My name's Joe Biden, and I'm a lifetime member of the NAACP. And I am all in.
U.S. President Joe Biden back on the campaign trail for the first time since the weekend's assassination attempt on Trump, speaking at the NAACP convention in Las Vegas.
I'm truly honored to be here to meet at this tense moment in this country. And it is a tense moment. Just a few days after the assassination attempt on Donald Trump, we're grateful he was not seriously injured. We continue to pray for him and his family. It's time for an important conversation in this country. Our politics has gotten too heated. I've said the Oval Office on Sunday night, as I made clear throughout my presidency, we all have a responsibility to lower the temperature and condemn violence in any form.
Also from the Biden administration on Tuesday, news that he's getting ready to propose a major Supreme Court overhaul in the coming week that would include term limits for justices and an enforceable ethics code. The Washington Post reported, citing two sources familiar with the plans, that Biden is also weighing whether or not to call for a constitutional amendment to eliminate broad presidential immunity. Word also that Biden will call for a ban on AR-style guns, like the one used in the assassination attempt on former President Trump. We're following these other stories from around the world. Mexico said on Tuesday it's going to receive 2,700 Cuban doctors to alleviate a shortage of specialists, despite criticism from opponents who say it will support the communist-led Caribbean nation to the detriment of local medical professionals. A new hearing in the espionage trial of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovitz has been brought forward to July 18th from August 13th. According to the Russian court hearing his case, Gershkovitz, a 32-year-old American journalist, denies any wrongdoing when on trial for espionage behind closed doors last month in Russia. Restaurants in and around Houston, Texas, in the United States on Monday, filed a class action lawsuit seeking more than $100 million from U.S. power provider CenterPoint Energy, alleging incompetence and negligence in the utility's efforts to restore power quickly following Hurricane Beryl. Police clashed with protesters in Kenya on Thursday in what appeared to be the biggest demonstration since President William Ruto withdrew proposed tax hikes. Reuters correspondent David Doyle reports at least one demonstrator was killed.
Youth-led nationwide demonstrations that broke out a month ago against proposed tax hikes have continued, even after President William Ruto withdrew the legislation and fired most of his cabinet.
We want to find that Ruto must go. That is the one, because he has failed to give us accountability.
In Kitengela, a town on the southern outskirts of the capital Nairobi, police fired repeatedly in the direction of hundreds of demonstrators. A Reuters reporter saw the body of one protester lying on the ground, blood oozing from a head wound. The National Police spokesperson declined to comment. Tuesday's protests appear to be the largest since Ruto withdrew the tax increases on June 26th. He's now caught between the demands of lenders like the International Monetary Fund to cut deficits and a population reeling from a rising cost of living. Indeed, protesters have directed some of their anger at the IMF, accusing it of being the driving force behind the now-scrapped tax hikes.
The guy is a puppet to IMF, that is it. Whatever he's doing for IMF. He's not leading this country at all.
IMF has said its main goal through its lending programs with Kenya has been helping the country overcome economic challenges and improve its people's well-being. Ruto's office had announced multi-sectoral talks for this week to address grievances raised by the protesters, but there was no sign they had begun. Most of the leading activists behind the protests have rejected the invitation, instead calling for immediate action on issues like corruption. Ruto's spokesperson did not respond to a request for comment.
That's Reuters correspondent David Doyle reporting. Israeli forces battled Hamas-led fighters in several parts of the Gaza Strip on Tuesday. The Palestinian health officials say at least 57 people were killed in Israeli bombardments. We get details on this now from Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman.
Gaza health officials said those casualties included 23 killed at a United Nations school in Nuseirat. The Israeli military said in a statement it attacked a group of terrorists who had operated from inside the school after taking steps to mitigate the risk to civilians. Gaza's health ministry said another 17 were dead after an airstrike in Khan Yunis on a car near a tented area housing displaced families in the humanitarian-designated area of Al-Mawasi. Tahrir Matir witnessed the airstrike.
The car was moving and a young man was walking. The car was targeted, blood was splashing, and shrapnel hit our tents, and martyrs were left on the street. We screamed, "We need an ambulance." We put them on carts and rickshaws, and the ambulance came after a while.
Reuters footage showed residents carrying bodies of the dead and wounded on donkey carts and in rickshaws to hospitals. The Israeli military said the strike targeted a senior militant in the Islamic Jihad group, an ally of Hamas. In a statement, the military said, quote, "We are looking into the reports stating that several civilians were injured as a result of the strike." Israel has vowed to eradicate Hamas after its militants killed 1,200 people and took over 250 hostage in an attack on southern Israeli communities last October 7th, according to Israeli tallies. At least 38,713 Palestinians have been killed in Israel's retaliatory offensive since then, Gaza health authorities said in their latest update on Tuesday. The Israeli military said in a statement on Tuesday that half of the leadership of Hamas's military wing has been eliminated, with approximately 14,000 fighters killed or captured since the start of the Gaza campaign.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Ukrainians are battling a record heat wave as residents also grapple with rolling blackouts from Russia's continued attacks on the country's energy system. The combination is creating a nightmare for the wider economy and everyday life. Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan has more on this.
By torchlight, Ukrainian mother Margarita Zakarchuk carries her child up to her 12th floor apartment. The lift is out due to a blackout. She is one of millions of Ukrainians struggling amid a record heat wave, compounded by regular power cuts making air conditioning units and refrigerators useless.
The first thing that has changed is that we don't cook much anymore. Secondly, we cannot store products in the fridge for a long time. For example, curd snacks for children spoil quickly. On the second or third day, they are not edible anymore. That's why we only buy food that we can eat today or tomorrow.
Regular Russian airstrikes have ravaged the country's energy system, leading to hours-long rolling blackouts. The Central Geophysical Observatory said on Tuesday it had clocked a record high 93.5 degrees Fahrenheit in Kyiv for July 15. Temperatures on Tuesday were expected to reach even higher.
During the heat wave, we cannot use the air conditioner. We are trying to survive using the shower. We bathe children in the water or we try to be outside in the park if we can.
Store owners like Victoria battle increased costs from running generators and product losses.
We suffer a lot. Blackouts last for 6 to 8 hours during the day, and it's a problem for dairy and ice cream. We don't order a lot of milk or butter because it spoils. We have to return products.
Ukraine's broader economy is also struggling in the heat. State weather forecasters say the harvest of late crops could decline by up to 30% in central, southern and eastern regions. The energy minister has urged consumers to conserve energy and minimise the use of powerful electrical appliances to preserve the grid.
Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. Police say the bodies of 6 people were found in a luxury hotel in downtown Bangkok with poisoning a possibility. Police identified the dead as 2 Vietnamese Americans and 4 Vietnamese nationals. The investigation is currently ongoing. Bolivian Cholitas are steering their way to empowerment with the public transport Lilac Line that helps women challenge gender barriers in the transport sector and creates a safer, more inclusive environment for all passengers. Reuters correspondent Arthe Thayaparan reports.
This is Felicidad Quispe, a driver with the public transportation Lilac Line in Bolivia. Quispe is one of dozens of women challenging gender norms here by driving taxis and minibuses.
Sí, hay mucha violencia ante la mujer.
There's a lot of violence against women, a lot of discrimination. For example, in the transport sector, they say women can't drive, and we must not be at the wheel. They say we must be at home, assisting our husbands. But as a woman, I feel I am capable.
Quispe told Reuters she found her path to independence at the Central of Productive and Entrepreneur Women in El Alto, near the capital, La Paz. The organization launched the Lilac Line in 2021 to train women so they could earn a source of income and sustain their families. Quispe says as a driver, she feels empowered.
La línea lila ha sido el motivo de que yo viniera a...
The Purple Line has been the reason I came to this organization, because I suffered from violence from my partner. For this reason, I looked for support, she says. Almost 51,800 cases of gender violence were reported in 2023 in Bolivia, according to the prosecutor's office. 75% of those were cases of domestic violence. Julia Quispe is the executive director of Central of Productive and Entrepreneur Women. She hopes the Lilac Line will grow and expand to other parts of Bolivia to help more women take control of their lives.
They learn to drive as we want to empower them. And the project expands throughout Bolivia so that many women get out of violence. Because the economy is a problem for women as they can't get out of their homes and stay with their husbands that shout at them, scold them, and tell them they're foolish.
Reuters correspondent Arthe Thayaparan. And finally,
it's the ideal way of catching swans.
It's an 800-year-old tradition, catching swans on the River Thames in London, so they can be counted. It's a swan census.
When we catch a family of swans, the young cygnets, we take them ashore, we will weigh them, we will measure them, and we check them for any injuries.
W47473.
What is it?
Once captured, they're tagged with a number, weighed, measured, and looked over for, as he just said before, injuries.
And a lot of the injuries we find from fishing tackle injuries. So a lot of them we can detackle, but if it's a serious injury, then they will go to one of the swan rescue organizations and to one of the vets there, and they will be attended to there.
And after 800 years of practice, they have the collection of the swans down to a science.
With long boats, which are skiffs, Thames skiffs, they're absolutely ideal for it and easy, because you make a great big circle, you work the boats in closer together, and then because you can lift the family of swans out by hand.
The swan upping, they call it the swan upping tradition dates back to the 12th century, when the English crown first claimed ownership of all the mute swans. which have long curved necks, orange beaks, and white feathers, and were then considered a delicacy that would be served at banquets. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us for this time. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and on our website at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.